ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 9, Text 24, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Devalinga Pratichanna,
Devalinga Pratichanna,
Svarbhanur Deva Sangsadi,
Svarbhanur Deva Sangsadi,
Pravishta Somam Apibach, Chandraka Bhyang Chasu Chitaha,
Chandraka Bhyang Chasu Chitaha,
Devalinga Pratichanna,
Devalinga Pratichanna,
Svarbhanur Deva Sangsadi,
Svarbhanur Deva Sangsadi,
Pravishta Somam Apibach, Chandraka Bhyang Chasu Chitaha. Rahu, the demon who causes eclipses of the sun and moon, covered himself with the dress of a demigod and thus entered the assembly of the demigods and drank nectar without being detected by anyone, even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The moon and the sun, however, because of permanent animosity toward Rahu, understood the situation. Thus Rahu was detected. Purport: the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mohini Murti, was able to bewilder all the demons, but Rahu was so clever that he was not bewildered. Rahu could understand that Mohini Murti was cheating the demons, and therefore he changed his dress, disguised himself as a demigod, and sat down in the assembly of the demigods. Here, one may ask why the Supreme Personality of Godhead could not detect Rahu. The reason is that the Lord wanted to show the effects of drinking nectar. This will be revealed in the following verses. The moon and sun, however, were always alert in regard to Rahu. Thus, when Rahu entered the assembly of the demigods, the moon and sun immediately detected him. And then the Supreme Personality of Godhead also became aware of him. We may think of demons as having ferocious features, but here we see that Rahu took the dress, a similar dress to that of demigods, and wasn't detected when he entered among the demigods. Means he must have been as good looking or had similar facial features and bodily features to those of the demigods. By dress, it could be understood that they were different. Just like in India, it used to be that you can understand someone which caste they belong to according to their dress. And even now, some of the castes, especially the women, they dress, or some of the women of a few of the castes dress according to the traditional way, especially here in Tamil Nadu. Some of the smarter women and Iyengar women dress with the traditional sari style. Although, anyway, I won't get too much into women's dress here. So that's one point. And when we depict demons in dramas, we'll have the talking in a very rough voice like this, and laughing like this. But they may be very sophisticated people. People in the world at the present time who are demons, they may be very sophisticated also. The present President of the United States is disliked by many people who think he's very gross. The previous President of the United States was much more suave and sophisticated, but they're both killing people in foreign lands by their policies. Just that one of them cut a profile of being a nice guy, and the other doesn't make any pretenses to be nice. What is happening here is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Mohini is cheating the demons. But Rahu, he detected what was going on, so he took countermeasures and tried to cheat, counter-cheat. He also tried cheating by pretending to be a demigod when he's not a demigod. He tried to cheat God, but God herself, in this case, didn't detect Rahu. It was the sun and the moon who, even prior to this incident, they had ongoing enmity, particularly with Rahu. The demigods, in general, have enmity with the demons and vice versa, but particularly the sun and the moon had enmity with Rahu, even from before this. Why? I don't know. Someone who does Shastric research, they can look in the Puranas and find out. It must be there somewhere in the Puranas or somewhere. Lochan Prabhu from Bihar, who ended up in Los Angeles and who passed away recently. He had studied all the Puranas and he knew all these background stories. But I don't know if there's anyone else in the world who has such knowledge like that. So cheating, counter-cheating, and then what happens? Counter-counter-cheating. Well, there comes a point when one just cuts the head of the other off, which will happen in the next verse. Actually, it happened a long time ago, but in terms of our reading, we can say it will happen in the next verse. So, to continue on the theme of cheating. Rahu was trying to cheat. Now, theoretically, Rahu could have got some of the nectar, or the real nectar. The real nectar is the lotus feet of the Lord. He could have surrendered at the lotus feet, could have run up to Mohini and fell at her feet and said, I surrender to you, I don't want to be a demon anymore, please give me your mercy. The real nectar is the nectar of the lotus feet of the Lord, the nectar of Krishna consciousness. Theoretically, anyone can do that. He didn't. The demigods also, they were all being cheated actually. The idea that we can enjoy in this material world, the demons were cheated and the demigods are also cheated. But the demigods are demigods because they enjoy the material world in a pious way, taking cognizance of the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas the demons, they might even begrudgingly accept that Vishnu is supreme. Rarely they may do so. They know he's a tough cookie. He's not a pushover by any means. But mostly they don't recognize that he's the supreme. And they both have the motive to enjoy this material world. So they're self-cheating. We may wonder why people are so easily cheated. Some cheater comes along. Cheating person. Well, because we are accustomed to cheat ourselves. It means that we're not very sincere. In the last few lectures, I posed the query, why is it that people are misled by these bogus gurus? In India, there's so much knowledge of genuine spiritual life. Nowadays, not so much. There's knowledge of genuine spiritual life, but there is a great culture there. And even though they're talking about these Iyengars, and they're raised in a culture, at least up to the previous generation, of devotion. to Vishnu in their homes, actually to Krishna mostly. But I saw, this was starting some 30 years ago, I saw, it may have been going on earlier than that, you'll find many of them, they worship, they're told not to worship demigods, but they worship this Sai Baba hoax. In those days, Shirdi Sai Baba wasn't known down south here, but it was this so-called Satya Sai Baba. Just nonsense. I had some experience somewhere, I think it was Abu Dhabi or somewhere, about 30 years ago, they brought me to someone's home, and then, or maybe that was Bahrain. More than once it happened that someone took me to their home and had nice pictures of Sri Venkateshwara and Ranganatha Swami, told me they're good Sri Vaishnava Brahmins, are very nice. And then I went in some room to change and I saw they'd stashed away the pictures of Sai Baba after the program. And then I got on their case like anything. And they didn't invite me again. They didn't want to hear. I said, your forefathers will be disgusted. Why are you doing this? This is great offense. But they didn't like to hear it. They preferred to be cheated with the promise that, what is it? Sai Baba, by worshipping him, you get, what do you get? Some ashes. And you get all blessings for material enjoyment. Very few people are sincerely interested in the truth. As we know from Bhagavad Gita. What can you say a verse? Mukunda, I'm asking Mukunda. Very few people are sincerely interested in the truth. You're sincerely interested in your fingernails. It's amazing how many devotees, they become completely absorbed in their fingernails during Bhagavatam class. Fingernail tattva. So, what's the answer? No, that's not the verse. Manushanam sahasreshu, sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Very few people are interested in attaining perfection. And yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mang veti tatvata. People, even people who are interested in spiritual life and may have attained perfection in some kind of spiritual life, very few know Krishna properly. What does it mean? It means that most people, they're not sincere to know Krishna. Put another way, they want to be cheated. They don't want what is in their real self-interest. Nate vidu swartha katinghi Vishnu durashaye bahirata maninas tepisha tantram andhaya tandai rupaniyamanas tepisha tantram urudam nibadha. People prefer to be misled, but people are blind and they prefer to be misled by blind people because matena krishne paratasvatova, they don't want to know about Krishna. And therefore, they don't know that the goal of life is Vishnu and they're caught in material existence and they don't want to know either. They're not sincere. That's all we can say. Then what does sincere mean? There's a question. I sincerely believe that Sai Baba is God. I believe it with all my heart and soul. You can be very sincere. I sincerely believe that by strapping some explosives on my waist and going into a crowd of people and blowing themselves up, and I'll blow up too, I'll go to Jannat, to heaven, and enjoy so many virgins. They sincerely believe it, otherwise they wouldn't do it. Right? Sincere doesn't... Hitler, he was sincere to conquer over the Poles and the Ukrainians, and it's a whole long list. Sincere to do something good for Deutschland, for Germany. But sincere in the sense that he was fully absorbed and he really wanted to do it. But real sincerity means, first of all, you should know what to be sincere about. In Krishna consciousness, or as we understand from Srimad Bhagavatam and from Rupa Goswami, sincerity means anyabhilashita shunya bhakti. We should at least be... It's not easy to get free immediately from all material desires. It is possible. Srila Prabhupada says that if you want, you can be Krishna conscious in a moment. It may happen, you can do it in a moment, or it may not happen in millions of births. But the cultivation of pure devotional service, I'm trying to be free from all... actually set the determination, the sankalpa, in the beginning that I'm going to practice Krishna consciousness only for the pleasure of Krishna. And those other desires are there, but I'm going to cultivate Krishna consciousness in such a way that the other desires don't get nourished, so that I can gradually become free from them and only desire to serve Krishna. Therefore, anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Anyabhilashita shunya bhakti, bhakti free from the cultivation of extraneous desires, is synonymous with sharanagati, in which the principles are to accept only that which is favorable for advancing in devotional service, to reject all else, and you know the others. Rakshishyatiti vishvaso goptritve varanang tata amanikshepa karpanye sharavidha sharanagati. Interestingly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his treatment of this, in his songs, he starts with dainya, which is synonymous with karapanya in this context, the feeling of lowliness and helplessness. So that is sincerity, that one is holy, and one's life is wholly and solely dedicated to Krishna. Such a person is not easily cheated. If we understand this principle, then we won't be cheated even by that which may appear to be devotional service but isn't. It is presumed that within ISKCON everyone should be cultivating pure devotional service, and the abhilashita shunya bhakti. So with that presumption, if we take it for granted that everyone's doing that, then we can promote all kinds of things with the saying that this is meant to bring people to Krishna consciousness. For instance, having advertisements that ISKCON is promoting regular yoga, which and the benefits you'll get from that are reduce fat, tone the body, get free from all physical and mental stress. That's a big claim. You get free from all physical and mental stress by doing some physical exercise. It's advertising physical exercises. Now, this is not the message of the parampara, but it's the message of ISKCON, according to one advertisement. So we may say, well, it's meant to bring people to have yoga, and then we get them to chant Hare Krishna. And we charge them a bunch of money, and we use it for promoting or serving the deities or something like that. So, it may seem that it's dovetailing something in Krishna consciousness, but it gives a different message to that of the parampara. ISKCON, International Society of Krishna Consciousness, is promoting a process by which you can tone your body, burn fat, and become free from all physical and mental distress. Of course, we say that chanting Hare Krishna should free you from mental stress. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe you'll get more stress. You're building this temple here. There's a lot of stress. physical and mental stress. So you may, actually Srila Prabhupada pushed his disciples to take stress in Krishna's service. He himself was able to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world by taking a tremendous load of responsibility and dealing with all kinds of uncultured people, eccentric people, crazy people, to help to bring them to Krishna consciousness. So getting free from stress is not our aim. In fact, Srila Prabhupada several times spoke about how having Krishna anxiety is the perfection of life. And he gave the example of Yashoda. Yashoda Mai, she's always in anxiety that Krishna, he's going in the forest, there are so many wild animals, and then he has no shoes on his feet, so the stones will prick his feet. So that Krishna anxiety is the perfection of life. So if one understands the principle of Krishnate Kila Cheshta, Krishnate Akila Cheshta, Tadarte Kila Cheshta, doing everything should be done for Krishna's happiness, and everything should be centered on Krishna, then one will become very cautious when he sees that something is being advertised which is not what Srila Prabhupada, as the representative of all the acharyas, of Vyasadeva, of the Shastra, of Krishna, not what Srila Prabhupada promoted. Yoga was very popular when Srila Prabhupada was present in America also. And he spoke on it, and he had the book made from his lectures, The Perfection of Yoga, in which there were lectures on the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So you'll find one of the chapter titles, Yoga as Rejected by Arjuna. This kind of yoga is rejected by Arjuna. One time devotees proposed in Vrindavan that we can have, for so many foreign tourists coming, hippies, we can have yoga classes for them to attract them. And Prabhupada said, yeah, very good idea. So what you do, you bring them in, you sit them down, and you give them classes on Bhagavad Gita. You can have a nine-day course and two sessions each day. And devotees were saying, well, come and have some exercise. And Prabhupada said, no. What's the point? This is real yoga. You tell them, but just to attract them, no. You want to learn yoga from us? This is what we teach. So the whole idea of teaching yoga and attracting people in this way was addressed by Prabhupada by saying that you just sit them down, and Prabhupada said they can sit in the cross-legged and breathing. They can breathe. They're allowed to breathe. So, I'm paraphrasing a bit here, sarcastically, as you can understand. We should be, in our eagerness to spread Krishna consciousness, first of all, we should understand what Krishna consciousness is, and then we should not be more intelligent than Srila Prabhupada in spreading Krishna consciousness. Now this might sound very skeptical. We shouldn't be skeptical. Well, yeah, we should be skeptical about the prospect of anything except pure devotional service. That we should be skeptical about. Materially, skepticism, this Ravindra Swarup Prabhu once asked Srila Prabhupada, he brought up the topic of skepticism, and Srila Prabhupada said, skepticism is rascalism. There's the materialistic philosophy of skepticism. Actually, in terms of the term materialism as used in philosophy, that's bad enough in itself, where you don't believe in anything spiritual. But skepticism is even worse. We don't believe in anything. It's a self-defeating philosophy. I don't believe in anything. So, do you believe what you just said? It's a self-defeating philosophy. See, I don't believe in anything, I don't trust anything, but when you're hungry, all of a sudden you have faith in rice and dal. If you're a vegetarian skeptic. So all of a sudden you have faith that if I eat, it'll be good. You don't have faith in anything. Well, maybe the next breath you take, there'll be poisonous gas in it, so you better stop breathing. Just stop breathing and die, and then finish. Why breathe if you don't have faith in anything? Just stop breathing. You don't need to live. What's the point of living? You don't even know if you exist, so why bother to breathe? So people become skeptical, bitter. This Srila Prabhupada discusses in his purport to that Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha Manmaya Mamu Pashritaha Bhavo Jnana Tapasa Puta Mad Bhava Magataha. Persons who are free from attachment, fear, and anger, who have become, who taking shelter of me, have become purified by austerity and knowledge. Many such persons, Krishna says, have attained to me. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada analyzes here the word krodha means when one becomes frustrated in enjoying material life and he gets cheated in spiritual life, then he becomes angry and he thinks, there's no God, there's no nothing. He becomes a skeptic, bitter. And they may say, well, how do you know there's God? How do you know? So we are intelligently hopeful. The materialist is foolishly hopeful. He's durasha. He's hopeful for something that will not happen. What is that hope? That he'll become happy in material existence. Or even if he did become supposedly happy, he has to die. So that's foolish intelligence and the foolishly hopeful. And the opposite of that is the skeptic who is committedly doubtful. And the real alternative is to become intelligently hopeful, to understand that the world is ordered, which suggests there's a purpose. We are living beings, we're not chemicals. I can't work it all out myself. What's going on? However big a philosopher I am, therefore we have to take knowledge from... There must be some source of real knowledge. And we take knowledge from the Vedic scriptures and attain to the highest goal of life, shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. That is sincerity. And to accept the process, that it's required that one has to give up the desire for sense gratification and for impersonal liberation. Bhukti mukti spriha yavat pishachi hridi vartate tavat. What's the next line? Bhakti sukhasyatra katam abhyudayo bhavet. Rupa Goswami rhetorically asks, as long as the witch-like desires for material enjoyment and liberation from matter are present within the heart, then one cannot. How can one taste? How can one have the bliss of Krishna consciousness? So sincerity is required. I'm now going to read Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12, Text 3, in which Shonak Rishi, speaking on behalf of the other Rishi, speaks to Suta Goswami. We all respectfully want to hear about him, Maharaj Parikshit, to whom Shukadev Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge. Please speak on this matter. This is a sincere inquiry. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, Shukdev Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge to Maharaj Parikshit. During the remaining 7 days of his life, and Maharaj Parikshit heard him properly, just like an ardent student. The effect of such a bona fide hearing and chanting of Srimad Bhagavatam was equally shared by both the hearer and the chanter. Both of them were benefited. Out of the 9 different transcendental means of devotional service to the Lord prescribed in the Bhagavatam, either all of them or some of them or even one of them are equally beneficial if properly discharged. Maharaj Parikshit and Shukdev Goswami were serious performers of the first 2 important items, namely the process of chanting and the process of hearing, and therefore both of them were successful in their laudable attempt. Transcendental realization is attained by such serious hearing and chanting and not otherwise. So this is sincere hearing and chanting, which we're supposed to accept, follow this path. And then in contrast, Srila Prabhupada continues, there is a type of spiritual master and disciple much advertised in this age of Kali. It is said that the master injects spiritual force into the disciple by an electric current generated by the master, and the disciple begins to feel the shock. He becomes unconscious, and the master weeps for his exhausting his store of so-called spiritual assets. Such bogus advertisement is going on in this age, and the poor common man is becoming the victim of such advertisement. We do not find such folk tales in the dealings of Shukdev Goswami and his great disciple Maharaj Parikshit. The sage recited Srimad Bhagavatam in devotion, and the great king heard him properly. The king did not feel any shock of electrical current from the master, nor did he become unconscious while receiving knowledge from the master. One should not therefore become a victim of these unauthorized advertisements made by some bogus representative of Vedic knowledge. The sages of Naimisharanya were very respectful in hearing about Maharaj Parikshit because of his receiving knowledge from Shukdev Goswami by means of ardent hearing. Ardent hearing from the bona fide master is the only way to receive transcendental knowledge, and there is no need for medical performances or occult mysticism for miraculous effects. The process is simple, but only the sincere party can achieve the desired result. This electric shock treatment is not so well known now because Sakale Neha Mahata Yoga Nashta Parantapa, that particular bogus narration is not so well known. It took place over 100 years ago, or it was advertised first 100 years ago. There was some Swami, I can't quite remember his name, something Vivek something, I just can't remember just now. He said that he had a Paramahamsa guru, and he went and the guru touched him and he felt an electric shock, and from the electric shock he went unconscious. And then when he came back to consciousness, he felt himself full of spiritual knowledge, and he saw his guru crying, and he asked him, "Why are you crying?" "Because I gave all my knowledge to you. And all of you who are not present here, because you're supposed to be here, don't laugh loudly. Stifle it all. No laughing allowed." Well, it's laughable, isn't it? It's absurd. It's a completely ridiculous idea that the guru no laughter. Boom! "I'm enlightened! My guru's crying. What happened? I gave all my spiritual knowledge. I don't have anything left." So we think it's laughable, but many people take that seriously. Or did. Now there are other bogus gurus who are more popular nowadays. They and if you say this is bogus, they become very upset. I had a lot of experience in Bengal. It was actually very dangerous, literally dangerous, to say anything against that some mission or their representatives or their group. They become very violent. There'd have to be at least 10 of them, because Bengalis, they get very bold when there's at least 10 of them. But yeah, they could kill you. They become very upset, very offended if we mock this. So why do they believe that? One thing is we were out distributing Prabhupada's books to give them some proper knowledge. In one sense you could say that's good, because a cornerstone of this Bharatiya Sanskriti, Indian culture. I just heard Srila Prabhupada's recorded lecture yesterday in which Srila Prabhupada was using this term. You are all Bharatiya. We are Bharatiya. We have this great wealth of actual spiritual knowledge. It was an English lecture. So one cornerstone of this spiritual culture is faith in Guru. And people take it very seriously. But they don't check against Shastra. They say someone's a guru, he's very spiritual, and he's absorbed in spiritual consciousness. But you can be absorbed in something, just like in, there's an example in the Vedic corpus of, or in the Vedic, yeah. In Vedic tradition, of a man is sitting at the side of the road, a cobbler, mending shoes, and the king goes past, which means the king comes with a whole retinue, and there's soldiers marching and playing trumpets and all kinds of drums. Not trumpets, it's the Indian equivalent, maybe Nadaswaram or something. So anyway, the king goes past, and the cobbler doesn't even notice, because he's so absorbed in his work. So you can be absorbed in something, but that's not the same as samadhi, spiritual samadhi. So it may be that some supposedly spiritual person is absorbed in something, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the real thing. He may be absorbed in his misconception. Abhiniveshita. Bhayam dvitiya dvitiya abhiniveshita syat ishada petyasya viparya smritihi. He's absorbed, but he hasn't given up his dvesha. Ishada petyasya viparya. His perverse dislike of the Supreme Lord. He may even talk about God. And talk about surrendering to God. It's all this Mayavad, it's a very complex, elaborate system of deception and self-deception. That's why it's warned that jibe nishta lagi shutra koilo byas Mayavada basya shunle hoi sarvanash. That Vyasadeva gave the Vedanta Sutras to clarify the teachings of Shastra, of everything else he gave. But if one hears the Mayavad commentary, then you don't become clear, you become worse off than before you started. It's so bewildering and attractive, the idea that, well, you couldn't become God by trying to dominate others. Well, you can just imagine yourself to be God, and then you can feel, I'm God. I'm self-realized, I'm God, Brahmalin. You won't see here in South India. Maybe you do, but I can't read Tamil, but you'll see. you'll see in North India some Swami advertise Brahmaleen. They'll write in Hindi, Sanskrit, that someone's supposed to be Brahmaleen just by advertisement. Brahmaleen, do you know what that means? It means absorbed in Brahman. It means he's made it. He's Jivan Mukta. He's liberated in his own life. So, by advertisement, people may believe that, but it's all cheating. So we're supposed to take this knowledge from Srila Prabhupada and drive out this cheating, not become part of it. Promoting education, for instance, promoting education for children to prepare them to become IIT students or anything else materialistic. Srila Prabhupada wanted to impart education, how the boys could be educated to preach against all this nonsense. But there's some elaborate thought process that we may think that, well, we'll educate them to be, so they can go on to IIT, Indian Institute of Technology, or become an airline pilot, or a social activist, or something, leaders of society. And we'll also get them to chant Hare Krishna a bit. And then what? I'm not sure exactly what happens after that in the fairy story in the mind. We'll educate enough of them, and then they'll all be very favorable to ISKCON. They'll be the leaders of society, and they'll help us to build more schools to get people to become airline pilots and IIT students and chant Hare Krishna, maybe, sometimes, when they're not flying a plane, or whatever. So it's an elaborate system of cheating by presenting something that Srila Prabhupada didn't preach and didn't teach, and what the Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't tell us. One has to catch the essence and not be misled by all of this. Hopefully, if one reads Prabhupada's books, one won't be misled by this. But we see even people read Prabhupada's books, but they're told that, I don't know what they're told, but somehow or other they read Prabhupada's books and then they promote yoga for burning fat. What happened? The one guru is giving the electric shock. Another guru the real guru is giving this knowledge which is so powerful, but you don't get any sensation, nothing at all. It just doesn't happen. We're chanting Hare Krishna. Yeah, but chanting Hare Krishna, let's go back a few cantos and dharmasya hi apavargyasya narto tayopakalpate. Dharmasya, I always get caught on this one. Nartasya dharmai kantasya kama labhaya hisrita. Dharma is not meant for fulfilling material desires. That's it in brief. Kamasya nendriya pritya. Our desires should not be directed towards sense gratification. Jivasya tattva jignasa. We should live for the sake of understanding the truth. Hare Krishna. That's a good line to finish, huh? We should live for the sake of understanding the truth. And living in the truth, and serving the truth, living a true life. What does that mean? I have to follow my own inner voice. No. Your own inner voice will say, I am meant for enjoying this world. I am God. If you have the inner voice, what you need is a big hammer and crush it. More dangerous than coronavirus is the inner voice that I hear, my little inner voice. Don't listen. Don't listen. That's Maya calling. Listen to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.